are listening to Radio Albion. Hello, everybody, and welcome to tonight's stream. We're live on Rumble and also on Odyssey. And we're here tonight for a special stream about the Labour Party Civil War. And you can probably tell I'm in quite a good mood. I've got that sound in my voice where you can tell I've got a little bit of a spring in my step. I'm happy, full of the joys of spring. This is what we want. Watching an anti-white establishment party enter a stage of complete chaos and fratricidal war is something that makes my heart sing with joy. So I'm here tonight to share with you my thoughts on this, where I think this is going to end up, and how this could affect the country, and actually how this could really help the nationalist cause. So this is going to be a deep dive on this one issue. Now, we're live tonight, as I said, on Rumble and Odyssey. Please share the stream if you can. Now, today, I've published a new Substack article. So you've got to remember, not only am I trying to do, well, not only do I usually do three streams a week on my own channels, I also do a minimum of two guest appearances on other people's channels, but I also publish two heavyweight Substack articles per week, which are usually between 2,500 and 4,500 words in length. Now, I've committed to doing one every week that's brand new, and I usually publish a slightly older article, which is beefed up. So I take an older article, I add new material, I beef it up, add some more facts, figures, and turn it into sort of a bigger and better article. But this week, I published two completely new articles. One was on the nationalist micro parties that did poorly at the recent round of elections. That was published on Tuesday. And today, I have published a new article. And this article is one of the most important that I've ever published because it illustrates how the English legal system is being subverted for the good of Israel. Now, I've detailed the recent trials of the six Palestine Action activists who were arrested after a raid on an Israeli weapons manufacturing plant in Filton near Bristol. Now, unless you've heard of this case, which I think most of you have because I've done a stream about this, you might not know that these six Palestine Action activists were charged with regular criminal offences, so strictly normal common or garden criminal offences, such as criminal damage. And they were also tried for these strictly normal criminal offences. And eventually, four of them were convicted, and most of the convictions were for criminal damage, which is a normal criminal offence. And you might be thinking, Mark, you're really labouring this normal criminal offence issue. That's because the judge, before the first trial, made a secret ruling that he believed that there was a terrorist connection to this case. So despite the defendants not being charged with terror offences, despite them not being found guilty of terror offences, they will now be sentenced or can now be sentenced as terrorists. This is extremely frightening for any political dissident. But that's not all. The judge made a number of other terrifying rulings before the case took place, before the case actually went into court, preventing the legal representatives of the Filton Six for talking honestly and openly in court. So the people, the barristers representing the Filton Six, weren't allowed to speak openly and discuss legal precedent in court. This affected their case. Four of them have now been found guilty, and they will now be sentenced under terrorist conditions, which could affect the rest of their lives. Now, I've done an article about this. It's over 4,000 words long, and it details the entire case. It details the subversion of the English legal system, and it discusses how this case could set a precedent that would affect every single political dissident who goes on trial in this country. So you want to check that out. It's up today. It's new. Please help me on Substack. Now, if you like these streams, if you like the work that I do, if you like everything that I'm doing, please do ask a question during the stream. You can donate directly through Rumble. If you send a donation, I will read out any question or comment attached to that donation. You can't donate through Odyssey anymore, which makes things difficult for me, but you can donate through Rumble. Please help me out. Please, please, if you were one of the people who subscribed to me and made a monthly donation on Entropy, if you're one of the people who regularly donated through Entropy, please go over to Rumble, register, and make a donation, because I am now missing all those subscriptions. They've all been cancelled. This has made a major impact on my financial well-being. If you can help me out, please do. Or alternatively, you can go to the pinned comment in the chat, go to my Substack, enjoy all the articles there for free, but subscribe to me from just $10 a month, which is, I think, a pretty good deal for anyone. Anyway, if you want to donate in other ways, you can do so via cryptocurrency. All the crypto links are in the description below. And finally, you can write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. So that's what I've been up to this week. That's where you can find my Substack. That's where you can find my new articles. They're really, really in-depth articles. So I hope you enjoy those. And that's how you can donate tonight live. And if you can support my work, I will be eternally grateful. Anyway, the stream tonight is about this Labour civil war. And I'm going to start by saying I think this is a good thing. I want the system to collapse. I want the political system and establishment in Britain to enter a state of collapse. I want it to go down. I do not want it to be preserved. I believe the system that we live in is by design anti-white. It has been created and managed to harm us, specifically in this country, to harm Indigenous Brits, white Britons. It's there to harm us, and as such, I don't believe it can be reformed. I don't believe it can be turned to our benefit. I think we're better off smashing the system and starting again from the ground up. And some people are nervous when I talk like that. Some people say, well, if we smash the system, won't that bring instability and chaos? I say, well, good, good. Because white Britons are unquestionably at the bottom of the pile. There is an ethnic totem pole in this country, and we are at the very bottom. So when you're at the bottom, and the system is designed to keep you there, to extract money from you, and then to use that money to bring in other people to replace you, the collapse of the system can only be a good thing. And let's say the system collapses, and then it's reordered, and we're still at the bottom for some reason. Well, we're no worse off than we were before, are we? I believe the only way is up, and I believe that systemic collapse is something that can help us. And when I'm talking about the system, I'm talking about the political two-party system. I'm talking about the current illusory system of what they call parliamentary democracy, which isn't parliamentary democracy. It amounts to elected dictatorship. And I think destroying both the Labour Party and the Tories is a good thing. And I've spoken about this many, many times before. And I've often spoken about the ability of parties like Reform to destroy the Tory Party. And I've been very clear that I think in many ways the Tory Party is actually worse than Labour, because Labour are quite nakedly anti-white and pro-immigration, whereas the Tories have always worn this mask of traditionalism, of anti-immigration, and generally, over the post-war period, white people have turned to the Tories as an anti-immigration party, as a sort of a pro-white party, as an implicitly pro-white party, I'll say, and have been disappointed. So I've often spoken with different guests, like I was speaking with Morgoth on Wednesday, about how important it is to destroy the Tories. But tonight, I'm talking about how important it is to destroy the Labour Party, because we don't want to destroy the Tories and then Labour be the victors. We want to destroy both and level the political playing field. So when we get into this tonight, some of this is going to be slightly repetitive, and I apologise if it's a little boring for people who've heard me make some of these points before. I've made some of these points about a week ago, and I've made some of these points on Wednesday with Morgoth. Now, you might think to yourself, well, what are you doing here, Mark? Why are you going to be discussing some of the things you've already discussed? I've heard this all before. Can't you come up with something new? Well, this is something new, but we are discussing how we got here first. We're building up to why we're in this situation. And the reason I do this is because I like these streams to be self-contained. There's nothing worse than coming to a stream and it being half an hour long, and the guy doing the stream says, well, I refer to my previous three-hour-long lecture on this. And you're like, ugh. Because at that point, you've immediately got to go back and watch three other hours of material before you can go to the stream that you wanted to go to hear about the thing that is the topic of the day. So we're going to start off by doing a little bit of a recap about the recent elections. And that's interesting for a couple of reasons. And let me explain why. Firstly, all the election results weren't actually in last time when I was doing my analysis. They were still coming in. And if you remember, I was sort of clicking refresh. I was sort of like, come on, we've got to get these in. We've got to find out what's happening. But all the results are here now. So let's have a look at the full results. And we're not going to be doing a full breakdown. We're not going to be talking about how well Reform did or the Lib Dems or the Greens. We're not going to be doing that full breakdown. We did that last week. But we're going to be looking at how badly Labour did. So this is just a quick recap. Now, in England, there were 5,066 council seats up for grabs. And I believe in England, there's about 16,500 councillors in England. So nearly a third of the council seats were up for grabs. More than 5,066 would have been up for grabs, but Labour Party actually blocked elections in some areas because they're restructuring councils. And this was very convenient because the councillors didn't want to lose their seats to Reform. But Labour came out of this. On the surface, when you look at the little bars, they came second, which was something that angered me quite considerably the day after the election when the results were coming in. And they took 1,066 seats or retained 1,068 seats. They retained 1,068 seats. But if you look at the important figure, in the last round of elections in England, Labour were pushed into second place, losing 1,498 seats. So they lost nigh on 1,500 seats, which represented roughly 60% of the seats they had on the morning when people went to the polls. So on Thursday morning, when people walked into the polling stations, Labour had 2,500 of those 5,066 seats. So Labour had roughly half of the seats that were up for grabs on Thursday, the 7th of May. They lost 60% of the seats they held. Labour came out of this, instead of half, they came out of this with 20%, roughly, of the seats that were up for grabs. This was an unprecedented disaster. But it gets even worse. In Scotland, Labour only lost 4 seats, but Reform gained 17. So now Labour and Reform sit with the same level of power in Scotland. And Labour were actually pushed out of power in Scotland by the SNP. Something which has caused that party a lot of problems in Scotland after ruling Scotland for so long. And now here we see the decline continue. So it was embarrassing in Scotland, but not as catastrophic as it was in England. Now in Wales, it was even worse. On the morning of Thursday, the 7th of May, Labour went into the Welsh Assembly elections with 44 seats. They were the biggest party in the Welsh Assembly. They had the leader of the Welsh Assembly, and they dropped down to just 9 seats. So they ended up with around 20%, 20 to 25% of the seats that they used to hold. So not very good for them. Very bad, in fact. In fact, catastrophically bad. And I'm going to tell you exactly how bad it was for them. They faced in England wipeout on multiple councils. So their losses were huge in terms of council seats. But council seats are important. But what's more important is the control of councils. And Labour surrendered the control of 38 councils in England. And that was because they saw a collapse across what was called the Red Wall. Now, the Red Wall is a place of traditional Labour heartlands in the north, and Labour lost almost every single seat it was defending directly to reform in these Red Wall Labour heartland areas. And they lost other seats in metropolitan liberal urban areas like London and Cambridge, and they lost them to the Lib Dems, they lost them to the Green Party. It was an absolute disaster. But in Wales, it was even worse. Now, this is the first time in history. So the Welsh Assembly was formed in 1999 under the Blair government. And ever since then, Labour Party has controlled the Welsh Assembly. This was the first time since it was established in 1999 where Labour lost control of the Assembly, allowing Plaid Cymru to become the biggest party in Wales and Reform to become the official opposition. So if you thought it was bad, if you thought it was bad in places like England and Scotland, it was utterly, utterly disastrous in Wales, to the point where the party has been completely shattered there. And it'll be hard for them to make a comeback, which is good. So to put it politely, it was a horrendous night for the Labour Party, or a horrendous day, should we say. People would say horrendous night, but most of the election results this time were counted the next day. So slightly different. But it was a horrendous round of elections, should we say, for Labour. Now, at this point, the decent thing for Keir Starmer to do would have been to resign. If you're the chief, if you're the man in charge, if you're the sort of head of the operation, and it goes this badly, the decent thing to do is to resign. And you resign for two reasons. Firstly, for the good of the country. And secondly, because you're obviously not governing well. This is a barometer of support. People don't think you're governing well. You leave. And the second reason you leave is for the good of your party. If you love the party you're part of and you are driving that party into the ground, and you know your friends and colleagues are losing their seats, and Labour Party activists are disappointed, and councils are being lost, and you're losing your grip on power, and this is part of a huge ongoing slide into political irrelevance, you leave to let someone new take over, because that usually stems the bleeding, at least for a little while. At this point, I said this on Wednesday on my show with Morgoth. I don't think the Tories are good people. I can't stand the Tories. I've written articles and made many videos about how much I dislike the Tories. I hate Boris Johnson. I can't stand Jacob Rees-Mogg. I can't stand Kemi Badenoch. I don't like the fact that the Tories are this nakedly Zionist party. But one thing you have to say about the Tories, and I don't think Tory leaders do this for the good of the nation, but Tory leaders will resign before they run the party into the ground. So when things are going badly, Tory leaders have this sliver of honour and decency. That honour and decency, I don't believe, is for the good of the nation. I believe it's for the good of the party, because they don't want the Tory party to be destroyed. So when Boris Johnson got into this minor kerfuffle over having a birthday cake in his office during COVID. He had to resign, and he resigned for the good of the party. You know, Liz Truss resigned, you know, after a record short stint as prime minister. You know, Theresa May resigned after disappointing election results. David Cameron sneakily resigned after he lost the Brexit referendum, so he didn't have to trigger the Brexit process. And it's a common thing for leaders to resign in that case. And also, in the case of Jeremy Corbyn, when Jeremy Corbyn lost the general election to Boris Johnson, he resigned. But Starmer doesn't have this decency. And you see this more with Labour politicians. They're more sort of averse to letting go. They're more willing just to stand there and say, well, so what? Throw whatever mud you want at us, we'll hang on. But I don't think I've ever seen a prime minister or the leader of a party hanging on so doggedly after such a disaster. This is really unprecedented. It's new territory. And Starmer has also faced a wave of condemnation from his own party. There are dozens of MPs calling for him to go. Many of his actual cabinet have already quit. And probably the most influential cabinet minister, Wes Streeting, who is actually a complete piece of scum. He's an ultra-Zionist Blairite toe rag. He has actually thrown in the towel as well and says he wants Starmer gone. But Starmer won't leave. He won't leave. So we're entering in to a period of what can be seen as Labour civil war. And a civil war is erroneously named because civil wars are the least civil of conflicts. In fact, civil wars usually lead to a greater degree of atrocities than you see in most other conflicts, because generally speaking, the hatred and bitterness in civil wars due to the sort of proximity and buildup of tensions between the combatants leads to a greater degree of violence, a greater degree of hatred between the two sides. And I've seen that. I remember when the BNP had these fracture splits, the level of hatred between the factions, the differences were so irreconcilable that even though the two sides were ostensibly both nationalist, you couldn't have had them in the same room. They'd have killed each other. They started tearing chunks off each other. It was absolutely terrible. So I know how damaging these kind of splits are to parties and how the rifts created are often never healed. You can never fix these things. So you saw that eventually Corbyn was forced out of the Labour Party. That's because the animosity between him and the more centrist Zionist Starmer faction was so deep that it could never have been reconciled. And in the end, the bitterness was so great that they had to get rid of him just to prove that one final point, just to take out a little bit of their spite and bitterness on him and make him sit as an independent MP. I don't think he's independent now. He's got his own party called Your Party, but that's kind of faded, really. I thought that was going to do sort of big numbers, but in the end, the Greens seem to have capitalised on that part of the electoral marketplace. That sort of section of the electorate seems to have gone green rather than to Your Party. But I think this will be very good for nationalists, because I think what you're going to see is this outpouring of bitterness and hate between Labour MPs, between leading lights at local level, and they're going to enter a period of civil war. And this is a lot worse than you usually see a split. Here's Sky News, and Sky News have said, you know, Labour Party on course to suffer one of its worst ever electoral defeats. This was on Friday, at nearly 2 p.m. on the day of the elections. And this was predicted. It can be seen. You can see the graph there. And this is all over the media. So the humiliation isn't just sort of me talking on sort of Rumble about this. The humiliation of this has been national. And this obviously led to Wes Streeting and other cabinet ministers leaving. This is an important article from The Guardian. Wes Streeting has quit as health secretary and called on Keir Starmer to resign as prime minister, saying it would have been dishonourable to remain in the post and there should now be a contest for the leadership. So once you start using terms like dishonorable, you're basically accusing the leader of the party of not acting in the best interests of the organization and the other elected officials who rely on the organization. These are big words, and they're not really the kind of words that politicians use. You know, it's usually the honorable gentleman, but this is dishonorable. But Streeting, who is also on the party's right, that's what they mean by that. He's a sort of Zionist centrist, very much like Starmer. These two are big allies, and this is why this has made such an impact. Will not immediately launch a challenge. Instead, he wanted to see a leadership contest with a broad range of candidates, a suggestion that the greater Manchester mayor, Andy Burnham, could fight in the contest. Now, this is the interesting bit, and this is where we're going to get to something really juicy. Streeting had long been gathering support for a challenge and has spent the week asking MPs to nominate him. Allies have consistently said he did not want to challenge Starmer directly, but hoped to be a candidate in a leadership contest if Starmer resigned. The fact he is not challenging Starmer immediately suggests he does not have the requisite backing of 81 MPs to mount a challenge directly. A challenge would likely be to prompt bids from other potential candidates, including former Deputy Prime Minister Angela Rayner and Ed Miliband, the Energy Secretary. Burnham would need to be selected for and win the Makerfield by-election. So this is where the interesting rub comes, okay? And this is where you've got the Daily Mail saying Burnham's risky gamble. And I'm going to explain this. So Andy Burnham is currently the mayor of Greater Manchester. And they call him the King of the North, which is an interesting designation. It's because he's actually apparently very, very popular in the Manchester area. He's led Labour to many victories there, and he's one of the few people that have managed to hold things together and retain a degree of popularity amid the Labour slump. But I'm going to make a joke here, I think, but regardless of what Alec Yerbury says, who wants to be the country's first unelected prime minister, to be prime minister, you have to sit in the House of Commons. You have to be elected as an MP. And this presents a serious issue for Andy Burnham. He actually has an incredible amount of power being a directly elected mayor, but he is not an MP. So despite his influence, despite his immense popularity in the party and his previously massive electoral wins, and I say previous, not just because they're in the past, but because if he stood again tomorrow, if the mayoral election was, if there was a do-over, he might not do as well in the current climate. But Andy Burnham is incredibly popular in the party. He has what the party perceives to be an incredible level of popularity in northern areas, hence the King of the North, and he does seem to be well-liked. He also has the backing of serious players like Wes Streeting, but he's not an MP. And because he's not an MP, he cannot immediately challenge Keir Starmer. Burnham would have to somehow get into Parliament. As you can't be Prime Minister without winning a parliamentary seat, contrary to what a little man in an army jumper has to say. Anyway, let's read some more. Burnham would need to be selected for and win the Makerfield by-election to stand as a leadership candidate. Labour is expected to face tough competition from Reform UK in the Greater Manchester constituency. So this is the interesting part. Burnham has to get into Parliament, and the only way he can get into Parliament, because there's not going to be a general election, is by winning a parliamentary by-election. And that's very interesting. Now, this has already been triggered because Makerfield, a constituency in Greater Manchester that used to have Josh Simmons as their elected MP, now has no elected MP. In other words, Josh Simmons has resigned, has quit his role, not because he didn't want to do it anymore, but because he wanted to make way for Andy Burnham. So this is how liked Andy Burnham is, that a fellow MP was willing to quit his post, trigger a by-election, so hopefully Andy Burnham, or hopefully for Andy Burnham and his supporters, hopefully Andy Burnham can get elected at this forthcoming by-election and then challenge Keir Starmer. Now, this is going to draw everything out and it's going to lead to some real bad feeling in the party, but I'll continue reading. In his resignation letter, Streeting criticised Starmer's determination to stay, saying, "Your heavy-handed approach to dissenting voices diminishes our politics." Basically, he's calling him a dictator in a nice way. He said, "It's now clear that you will not lead the Labour Party into the next general election, and that Labour MPs and Labour unions," the unions of also said he has to go, "want the debate about what comes next to be a battle of ideas, not of personalities or petty factionalism. It needs to be broad, and it needs to be the best possible field of candidates. I support that approach, and I hope you will facilitate this." Streeting told the Prime Minister when they met on Wednesday that he had lost confidence in him, a meeting that lasted just 15 minutes and where Starmer told Streeting he would fight any challenge. Close ministerial allies of Streeting, Jess Phillips, Zubir Ahmed and Alex Davis-Jones, stood down on Tuesday calling for Starmer to resign. Several of the Streeting allies, including Melanie Ward and Streeting's former ministerial aide, Joe Morris, as well as the backbenchers Chris Curtis, Alan Gemmell and Jas Athwell, have also called for Starmer to go. If he does not resign, Starmer would automatically be on the ballot paper in any leadership contest, and his allies have made it clear he would fight any attempt to dislodge him. So this is the interesting thing, and I've never seen this before. A leader of a party come out of these disastrous elections and attempt to fight a leadership challenge. Any race would mark the first time a challenger has attempted to dislodge a sitting Labour Prime Minister. Well, I said I've never seen it in my lifetime, and that's because it's an all-time first here. It's something new. Streeting's departure comes as Starmer faces record low popularity ratings just 2 years after he came into office with a historic majority. In his letter, Streeting said that the local elections had convinced him that Starmer's leadership was at the heart of why people were turning away from Labour. Now, just on the side of this, I think that's crap. I don't think people are turning away from Labour because of Starmer. I think people have turned away from Labour because Labour are absolute scum. And they're just risible. People can't stand them. People hate them. They hate their policies. They're basically cooked. So I don't actually think it's all Starmer's fault. I think it's generally the party's fault. He goes on for quite a while. This is quite a long article. But this is a very risky gambit, and it's a risky gambit because it involves an MP standing down, potentially leaving that seat open for someone else to grab it. It means that there has to be a by-election. They can't just hand the seat to Andy Burnham. And this by-election is happening at a time when Labour's popularity is at an all-time low. And Makerfield, the area in which this is taking place, or the constituency in which this by-election will take place, is really, really interesting. So, as I've already said, Josh Simmons, he's announced his resignation. He's going to vacate the seat to make way for Andy Burnham's return. Obviously, the party's national executive will have to allow Andy Burnham to be the candidate. Now, in the recent Gorton and Denton by-election, the NEC, the National Executive Committee of Labour, they blocked him from contesting it to try and stop him getting back into Parliament to protect Keir Starmer from a challenge. However, people are saying that they're going to let him this time because that would just seem as too undemocratic and it would harm Starmer and it cause more bad feeling. Now, the candidacy for this closes on the 18th of May, with a formal selection taking place on the 21st, and the date of the by-election would be as early as the 18th of June, so just a month from now. That could be the earliest. Now, the problem is, from Labour's point of view, is they're at an all-time low in terms of popularity, and this would be one of these highly competitive challenges. Now, historically, Makerfield has been this safe seat, but recently Reform won all 8 of the council wards that make up the constituency of Makerfield. So you have parliamentary constituencies and they usually have at least 4 council wards that consist or that make up the constituency. So at the highest level of government, in a constituency there is an MP, then the constituency is split into a number of wards where councillors are elected, and Reform just won all of the wards. So if the election was based on how people just voted at the local councils, Reform just won every single seat inside the Makerfield constituency. And they took 50% of the local vote compared to Labour, who were down to just 22%. So Reform basically took a majority in the recent elections that took place in Makerfield. This would make it very hard for Andy Burnham to win the seat, but he has to win the seat to get back into Parliament. Now, if you look at Makerfield, it has a population of just over 105,000 people. It's predominantly an old white working class area. And interestingly, it is 96.7% white. And of that, well, it's 96.7% white, and it's 94.49% white British. So Makerfield, interestingly, is almost the PAF no state, because we say that we would like Britain to be 95% white British. And Makerfield, well, at the time of the last general census, was almost 95% white British. It might be slightly lower now, it might be sort of 92% white British, but it's overwhelmingly white British, and the highest percentage of any other ethnic group in the constituency is Asian, which is 1.2%, just 1.2%. And just as an added thing, over 97% of the population was born here in the United Kingdom, actually born here. So it's a very traditional area. This is the kind of place where you would expect Reform to do very, very well. Nearly 73% of the houses are owner-occupied, so they're people who've got a stake in society. That's higher than the regional average. And the medium weekly wage for full-time employees is £550 a week. So it's a slightly lower income than the national average. And the overwhelmingly majority of people who are religious in the area are Christians. In fact, the religious breakdown is Christians make up 65.4%, no religion 28.5%, and Muslim just 0.8%. Now, that's very important, because at the recent Gorton and Denton by-election, it was the Pakistani Muslims, now just Pakistani Muslims alone, made up over 20% of the constituency. This is not Pakistani Muslim territory. In fact, Muslims make up less than 1% of the constituency. So this is a place where Reform would be expected to do well and have just taken over 50% of the vote at the recent elections. That makes this a very, very difficult seat for Labour to take. And looking at that breakdown, I'm going to read this directly. This is a direct quote. Reform UK hold a substantial presence in the area after sweeping all eight Makerfield wards in the May 2026 elections, securing individual seats in areas like Abram, Oral, Hindley and Worsley Messnies. Well, that doesn't bode well for a parliamentary by-election for Labour. In fact, quite the opposite. That would suggest that Labour could be in for a big shock here. Now, if you look at Makerfield as a constituency, these are the election results from 2024. And what was the turnout? The turnout was 52%. You'd expect the turnout for a parliamentary by-election to be lower, somewhere between 30 and 35%. And Labour, Josh Simmons, took 18,202 votes, 45%. Reform, Robert Kenyon, took 12,803 votes, 31.8%. Now, the majority there is just 5,399 votes, and Reform are catching up. And I think they would do a lot better at a parliamentary by-election where turnout would be lower and people would be very, very angry now with the Labour government. We're 2 years on. We'd almost be exactly 2 years on from that previous general election. People are very angry. They don't like Labour. And I think if Reform selected the right candidate, this would be something that they could win quite easily. This would be something that they could go in at and do very well. Now, to win this, I think they would need a white female candidate. I think a white female candidate would be necessary. And I think that would push them over the edge. A soft face, somebody who was soft to look at, probably from the constituency, attractive, well-spoken, probably a mum, so people could identify with her, and somebody who was hard on issues such as grooming and immigration and wanted to put local people first, and with a message that they don't want Makerfield to become like other areas of Greater Manchester that have been lost to immigrant populations. That would be a very, very powerful message. And this would be good. So you're going to ask yourself, what outcome do I want and why? Well, I've said before, chaos is good. When there is chaos in the ranks of your enemies, that is good. That's what we want to see. We want to see Labour not have a short, decisive civil war. From a nationalist perspective, we want Labour to have a prolonged, bitter, drawn-out, ugly, fratricidal civil war that can never be settled. We want wounds so deep they can never be healed. That's what we want. So the ideal scenario from a nationalist perspective is that Andy Burnham fails to win the seat. Reform win the seat. They humiliate Labour. Burnham's return to Parliament is blocked. And the Labour civil war enters a new stage. People don't know who to choose as the candidate. There is then no uniting candidate. You see, Burnham's a popular guy. If Burnham comes in, he's going to be the uniting candidate. He's going to help put it all back together again. He's going to be the guy that people unite behind. They get rid of Starmer, and there will be a landslide for him. He's going to be the hero that will fix things and he will mend it. If he fails to get in, who are they going to back? Who are they going to be behind? Well, a lot of people won't be behind Streeting because he's an ardent Blairite Zionist. Will they bring back Ed Miliband? Probably not. And if they did, people would hate him even more. Just remember the bacon sandwich incident, people. Remember the bacon sandwich. Will they bring in, as Morgoth calls her, chip shop Debs? Will Angela Rayner be sat there in the parliamentary canoe vaping with a can of Carling in her hand? Who knows? But it will be ugly. Would Starmer hold on if Burnham doesn't get back in? We don't know. But you would end up with a Labour civil war. It would be protracted. And the battle between these people would probably paralyse the country. The government would stop working. There would be wave after wave of petty resignations. There would be people trying to sabotage their friends and their own party as a way to get what they wanted. The country would be paralysed and Labour would become even more unpopular. And that's what we want. What we want is Burnham blocked, Reform winning, Labour humiliating, Starmer holding on, the country being paralysed or the government being paralysed, and what could be months, if not more than a year, of internal bickering for the Labour Party. This is because we want the breakup of the two-party system. And we want the Tories to be taken down, but we want Labour to be taken down too. And I think this is a generational chance to do that. This has been a historically terrible election for the Labour Party. And for a historically terrible election to be followed by a narcissistic lunatic holding on as leader, and then a humiliating and totally avoidable by-election loss, because there was no need for this by-election. This would cost Labour a seat in Parliament. That would be another humiliation and bloody nose. Burnham would be blocked. He's the man necessary to put the party back together again. And there would be no one there to put Humpty Dumpty back together again. And that's what I want to see. That would speed up the decline of the two-party system. And I think Starmer leading the party into the 2027 council elections would be a disaster. I want Starmer to get all the way to 2029 so he completely sinks the party. This is what would be good from a nationalist perspective. Remember, guys, we're at the bottom of the system. We're the lowest of the low. We're at the very lowest rung of the totem pole. The only way is up. And if the system collapses and everything falls to the ground and we're all back at the same level and have to battle for dominance in a new political landscape, well, then it's anyone's game, isn't it? Anyone can gain power. Anyone can move up. Collapsing the system, collapsing the totem pole and starting again benefits those most who are at the lower levels. And as white Britons, we're at the lowest level. Now, I think Labour has never been more vulnerable than it is. And that's a good thing. But we, as white people, we are vulnerable, but we're only going to get more vulnerable as time goes on. We're only going to become a smaller group within the wider population. Our percentage of the population, our share of the population declines on average by, or has been declining on average since the turn of the millennium by 0.8% per year. By the 2050s, we'll be a minority. If this political system collapses now, when we're about 70% of the population, I believe we have a greater chance of coming out on top than we do if the system collapses in, say, 2055 or 2067. I think we need these parties to collapse now. I think that gives us the greatest chance of survival, because we will still be larger in number and we will still have the chance that if just 50% of our people vote the same way when this systemic collapse happens, we would still have a chance if 50% of our people came together. And in some areas, you know, 50% of the people are voting for reform. It would give us a chance to get out of this. I think this is a really good bet for us. I think there is going to be anarchy and chaos. And I think that we have to do something. I think that nationalists, if they are on the ground in places like Makerfield, we have to, I'm not saying campaign for reform, but we have to campaign against Labour. We have to get the message out not to vote Labour. The Greens will stand. I don't think they will do particularly well. It's not a green area. It's a white working class area. Green areas are ethnic minority areas and urban white liberal areas like Cambridge. This isn't going to be a place where the Greens do well. But if the Greens take 10, 15%, that won't be reform voters. It will be Labour voters. The Tories could be a little bit resurgent, but I hope they're not. The Lib Dems could do well, but there are going to be multiple parties all trying to humiliate Labour. Reform are really, realistically, the only party that can do it, looking at the last results. But if Greens fight the seat, and they have said they will put everything they have into Makerfield to try and ensure that Burnham doesn't get elected. This could almost be sort of this unholy alliance. You've got Reform chipping away at one side, Greens chipping away at the other, Labour squeezed out, total humiliation for the Labour Party, and no way to rescue the party from Starmer. And the other benefit of this, and I mentioned this earlier, was the unions are no longer backing him. Now, the Labour Party only exists because of union money. The unions give Labour, I think it's about £8 to £10 million a year. Imagine if they said, enough's enough. No more money, no more donations, no more of our activists coming out to help you. This could be a generational chance to destroy a party that has existed for over a century. And that's why I think this is so important. I think this chaos should be drawn out, and I think we should do everything in our power to ensure that Starmer remains in charge of the Labour Party, because I think that will be the thing that does the party the most damage in the long term. And we do not want that party healing. We do not want it coming back. We want Labour and the Tories resigned to the dustbin of history so our people can break free, so we level the political playing field, and hopefully within that chaos, within that systemic collapse, something better can come out of it in the long run, and the sooner the better, because I want this to happen before we become a minority. It's going to happen, but let's bring it forward so we can take advantage of it whilst we're in a numerical position to do so. Anyway, that's really all that I have to say tonight. I hope that everyone likes what I've had to say about this. It's been slightly shorter than usual. Sometimes I go up for 2 hours on these things, but I think this has been an important topic to talk about, and I haven't heard anyone else talking about it, so I hope you've enjoyed it. And I've got to say this, before I do the Super Chat, so I only had one Super Chat tonight. If anyone wants a Super Chat and help me out, they can do, or you can go over and subscribe to me on Subscribestar, which is over on Substack. If you want to go and support me over on Substack, please do. You can become a paid subscriber over there, and that really helps. But please send a Super Chat. We've only got one tonight, so if you want to support me financially, it'd be great if more than one person could. But if not, don't worry about it. I will answer the question in a few seconds. But I hope this has been an interesting stream, and I hope I've talked about things that other people aren't yet talking about. And one of the reasons I like talking about this, and I want to be really clear about this, is because it actually does interest me. So sometimes I talk about things on streams that might not interest me as much as other things, but as I came from a deeply political background, i.e. the BNP, where we were contesting these elections, I was really embedded in that process, and I really liked doing the number crunching, working out how things were going to pan out during the elections, and I still enjoy doing that. So I hope you've enjoyed this, even if for some people, electoral talk isn't that interesting. Anyway, I'm going to do the Super Chat. Pops and Me 22 gave $2. Thank you so much. So, hi, Mark. Been giving you a shout out on all the streams on Crusaders GG. They're all watching the stream of Sam Melia telling his story about when he was arrested for stickers. Well, thank you so much. And as I said, if you tell Paul Miller to email me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com, that's mark@thefallofwesternman.com, I will interview him. I will do a special night, either a Friday or a Sunday, interview with Paul Miller. Paul, Gypsy Crusader, reach out to me. I know people keep lobbying me to do this, and I'm happy to do streams with anyone as long as people are sensible when they come on with me. As long as you don't come on and start, dropping N-bombs and stuff, you're welcome to come on as long as you stay within, what we're doing here in the UK, so I don't get arrested. Rich 17810 gave $5. Thank you so much. Said, evening, Mark. What time do you think the first lines of Coke and cans of lager will be consumed on the Avanti heading for Euston tomorrow? Well, it is Tommy Robinson's big Unite the Kingdom rally tomorrow. And that's really interesting. And I've got to say this. I was talking to a friend about this earlier today, and he said to me, Mark, what do you think Tommy hopes to achieve through UTK, through Unite the Kingdom? That's an interesting question, isn't it? Because when I do anything, I do actually plan it out. I do actually plan it out. And people have sort of not given me much credit over the years for doing some of the things I do. But a lot of planning goes into everything. I'll give you an example, because I can talk about this now, because I'm here tonight with you guys and you're asking me questions, and a guy was kind enough to give me $5. When we arranged the Nuneaton demo, I was liaising with numerous nationalist groups, including Remigration Now. I spoke to the White Vanguard guys. I spoke to other groups that we didn't really want in attendance. I didn't speak to them directly, but I spoke to them through a proxy. I had to deal with the police. I spent hours dealing with police liaison. But I had a plan. I'm going to tell you what the plan was. We go there for several reasons. Firstly, it's a place where there's problems and we have answers to those problems. Secondly, we go there to reach the people of Nuneaton directly. So we go there we talk to people, we impress them, we give out leaflets, we build support for PA. And thirdly, we do it so we show that we're strong, we show we can hold these events, and when the social media comes out, when Steve Laws puts it up on X, etc., people say, wow, who are these guys? Who's that guy there giving the powerful speech about demographics? Oh, that's Mark Collett. Yeah, I remember his YouTube. So you do it for several reasons. You do it to reach the public, to tell the public that you have a solution to their problems. You do it because you want to get publicity, you want to have your voices heard. But you also do it for another reason. Now, you might think this is silly, but when we went to Nuneaton, we made a political demand. That political demand was threefold. Close the borders, close the hotels, deport the illegals. Now, a lot of people are going to say, look, Mark, what are you talking about, you idiot? They're not going to do what you say. There was sort of, 400 of you there in Nuneaton, maybe 500 over the course of the day. You know, the political elite aren't going to do what you're saying. What, a couple of hundred nationalists and you're making demands? Yeah, we made demands. We went there. We reached the people, we gave solutions to problems, we leafleted, we recruited people, but we made political demands. Now, what does UTK do other than make Tommy Robinson a lot of money? Well, I don't know. What political demands is Tommy making? He's told people that he wants black, white, Hindu, Buddhist, even Muslims there. He will have, I should imagine, at least one Muslim on stage. He will have black gospel singers on stage. He will be saying that we need to support Israel, that we need to support Iranian dissidents living in the West. What's he actually calling for? Because to me, there is no call. There is no reaching the people, because there's no one in that part of London that you can reach. People will, on average, spend about £100, probably more. So for me to go down there, it would cost me maybe 90 quid on the train. Let's say I bought myself a giant Red Bull. That's 93. Let's say I treat myself to a Five Guys while I'm down there. That's another 20 quid. So it's going to cost me well over 100. Let's say the average spend is 100 and 300,000 people turn up. That's £30 million burnt. £30 million of patriots' money up in smoke, and not a single coherent demand will be made. When you go to Nuneaton, Steve Laws calls for remigration. Mark Collett calls for white unity. Laura Towler calls for an end to hate speech legislation. Sam Melia stands up and talks about political prisoners. It's all part of a bigger cause. And that cause is very, very well knitted together. You can see how it all fits together. Up on that stage, you're going to have tomorrow, you're going to have arch multiculturalists like Sharon Osbourne. You're going to have people there like Sargon, who's basically, at heart a libertarian. You're going to have politicians from multiple parties all calling for you to support their parties. You'll probably have some Tories saying, come back to the Tory party. This is what we really stand for. But ultimately, it's going to be a show of the same multiculturalism and diversity that really we fight against. And I think that's why it's a little bit of a farce. And I think there may well be trouble there. And let me explain why. I think tomorrow, the powers that be will be looking for something to go wrong. I wouldn't be surprised if the police weren't out to arrest people. I wouldn't be surprised if people weren't bearded up and leery. And I wouldn't be surprised if there weren't some clashes and arrests along the way. And if there are, it'll make the news. I'm quite reserved about tomorrow. I'm quite reserved about tomorrow because it comes hot on the heels of what happens in Golders Green. And if you're watching my output. I've been talking a lot about the response to Gold as Green. I've done a brilliant, if I do say so myself, Substack article about the legal response to Gold as Green and the new laws that are coming in. Now, all we would need would be a little bit of a kerfuffle tomorrow, and you could well see the Metropolitan Police, Mark Rowley, the government enacting some of this new legislation to stop nationalist protests in the future. So I'm a little bit nervous because it's all sort of, when you look at it all and you stand back, it's like pieces of a jigsaw. And the more pieces that get put in place, the more you can tell what you're looking at. And I am a little bit concerned. I look at these things and I think to myself, I'm not quite sure fundamentally what to expect. But people will be drinking. People will be having a few white lines. People will be smoking weed. And people will be a little rambunctious. And I'd warn anyone that goes tomorrow, by all means, go down, but behave yourself. Stay sober, stay out of trouble. And when it's over, get on your train or bus and go home. Don't be hanging around. There's a large pro-Palestinian march tomorrow also through London to commemorate the Nakba, which is obviously, again, a genocide of Palestinians by Israeli Jews. I hope the two demos stay apart and I hope there aren't any clashes. Yeah. So there you go. And finally, Mr. Smalls14 gave $5 and said, "Great show, Mr. Collett. Top of the morning, Mark." Well, thank you so much, Mr. Smalls14. That's very kind of you. And that brings us to the end of the show. There are no more Super Chats. You can support me on Substack at any time by subscribing. And if you really like me, you can up your membership there to a founding member, which makes the donation larger. That's really, really appreciated if you do that. You can donate at any time through Rumble. All you have to do is click that button. If you're watching on replay, you can donate by a crypto. You can get in touch with me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. That brings it to the end of the show. Thank you to all those who tuned in. I hope you enjoyed it. A little bit of a shorter stream than usual, but I hope everyone liked the analysis. I will be back on Wednesday for Patriotic Weekly Review, and I'll have a special stream on Sunday night, which is a surprise. Anyway, thanks for being with me. I hope you all have a great weekend. Love you all. See you all again soon. Thank you, everybody. Good night.